And I'm just I got to pull up some notes. I actually took notes for this.
Oh, dude, I take copious notes for Raw. I don't know if you heard last week's, but I had it all banged out in 30 minutes.
This was a long show.
Monday.
I forgot how long Raws can be.
It must. And that's the funny thing. It's always this long. It's always this long, Joe. But that's okay.
I got questions about this, man. It's been a while since I've watched the show.
Well, we'll get there, but you know, like, tell me, how's the renos coming?
We have lights. That's a good thing.
Now, for those that don't know, what are you renovating?
Pretty much our first floor. So living room and kitchen.
Okay. So three other floors to go, but.
Well, no, we're not doing that quite yet. And one floor right now is enough. So.
In Casa Aguinaldo. The palace of Joe, yes, where you and your royal family.
We're just waiting for a floor to show up, and once that happens, we can start sort of moving some stuff back around.
A floor to show up?
Yeah, they've ripped up our floor. We don't have a kitchen. We don't have a living room. It's all good.
Are you guys like ordering a lot of food in right now, or how are you coping with no kitchen floor?
A lot of barbecuing. Nice. Crock pot stuff. Toaster oven's always a good option. And yes, ordering out, of course.
But yeah, I mean, that's not a bad thing, dude.
No, not at all.
You're getting to spend all day at the grill, basically. Damn, that sounds rough. That sounds awful.
I did my first some scrambled eggs on the barbecue with this grill pan that I bought from Costco. And that was like, oh, cool. But then I realized that the barbecue is much hotter than the stove. So I got to figure out my heats on the barbecue.
Tell me what a grill pan. Okay. So your barbecue doesn't have the little side burner then, obviously.
It does, but it doesn't work. Long story. It's an old barbecue. So I was like, all right, I need something to put on the barbecue grill. And so, you know, they've got this like cast iron sort of piece of metal. It's a pan. I'm like, okay, cool. I could maybe do eggs on this. So, you know,
and let me guess, you have inside in your kitchen, you have like the fancy, do you have the glass top stove with the reaction stuff that you have to use there? And you don't want to use your fancy frying pans on the barbecue.
Yeah, no, we don't want to do that.
Yeah. In other words, my wife would murder me if.
Yeah, pretty much.
That's awesome. I too cooked over an open flame today, which doesn't really happen that often on this trip, man. I don't often stop somewhere long enough to really set up and cook in the wrestle wagon here. So I did a breakfast supper tonight because it's easy, it's fast, and it tastes oh so good.
Nice.
But that's what got me the energy to do this Raw review afterwards. Cause I don't know what it is, man, but let me ask you, because I'm doing this every week. And like I said, last week I could bang through this thing in about 30 minutes, which I felt I did a thorough job, but at the same time, maybe there's things that you picked up on that I didn't notice here. So what are your first takeaways after watching your first Raw in a while?
The commercials are weird. Like the one that I noticed the most was the AJ Styles one. So AJ Styles versus The Miz.
Right.
AJ comes out and then they go to this backstage segment, like the 4th of July party with the Street Profits.
Yeah.
And then something else happened. And I thought, oh, maybe this match isn't happening. And then all of a sudden The Miz came out. I'm like, was AJ standing out there for like 5 minutes? Like, what was he doing?
Well, I actually timed it and AJ was out there for, you know what? We'll get there. We'll get there okay, when we we'll get to that there. Match.
But that was the one, like, again,
this is something they do on Raw now all the time, actually. And it's actually become kind of a thing of joke because for the longest time it was Becky who was out there forever and ever and ever and ever. And then we would start timing it and it got to ridiculous lengths. But yeah, AJ seems to be the other sacrificial lamb when it comes to these waits.
It's just such a weird thing to watch. And then the other thing that I'm not used to is, you know, like with Dynamite, for example, they'll say, you know, we're going to break and pick and pick or something like, but at least they'll call to a break.
Yeah.
This one, it was weird. It was, they'd be wrestling and then all of a sudden the sound would cut down and then they go to break. And I'm like, oh, is this, and that's a thing now?
That's keeping the drama up because, you know, who's going to win? It's anyone's match. Break. That's what they do.
Yeah, that was a weird thing. And again, this is probably because I haven't watched the product in a while.
No, that's fair. That's fair. Before we get into that, can I tell you where I am today?
Are you in Calgary?
I am in Alberta, Canada. But I have actually taken up residence at a campground just so I could do this show without any hassles tonight. I wanted to be somewhere that I could have decent Wi-Fi, I could have decent connection, and I didn't have to worry about power supplies or anything. So I got an actual campsite tonight. My campsite is literally a part of a theme park here in Calgary.
Okay.
A very well-known theme park called Callaway Park.
All right.
It's kind of like one of the West Edmonton Mall things you do when you go to Edmonton or when you go to Toronto, you know, if you're there and you go to like Eaton Center or something. It's one of the touristy things to do. But at the same time, this is a campground that is owned by the people that own the theme park here. So right next to me is a theme park with roller coasters and rides and games and all that stuff.
I'd never heard of this place. So
yeah, well, go ahead and Google it if you want. Whip it up on the old Google box there. But you'll see Callaway Park. It's kind of a Calgary tradition. When you're a kid and you get to go to Calgary, it's like you hope for two things. You get to go to the Calgary Zoo or you get to go to Callaway Park. So now that I'm an adult, I go to Callaway Park's campground because it has the cheapest per night rate.
Nice.
And that's it. That's it. Because last night I was actually going to be in Cochrane, which is about 25 minutes northwest of Calgary. But my reservation got mixed up or something. So I just ended up kind of freewheeling it wherever and did the show in the city. But I decided I wanted to camp somewhere that was close to the city. And I have no plans this week except to attend a dungeon wrestling show on Friday night here, which is a co-presentation of Dallas Hart, who is Red Hart's son.
Right.
And making an appearance at this show is Bret the Hitman Hart.
Nice.
Yep. And it's like an indie fed / the return of wrestling to Stampede, because it's Stampede week coming up. And
Right. Okay. Gotcha.
This will be the first time that Bret Hart has appeared at a wrestling event during Stampede week since that In Your House Canadian Stampede back in 97.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Right.
Wow. That's a long time.
So it's kind of neat, right? And I'm interested to see, like, a lot of my friends from the Western Canadian wrestling scene are on the card. Brian Pillman Jr. is going to be there.
Cool.
Harry Smith, the British Bulldog Jr., Davey Boy Smith Jr., whatever you want to call him. He's going to be there. One half of the NWA Tag Team Champions now. Nice. And it should be a great show. There's a weird / really cool resurgence of indie wrestling in Alberta right now. And some of the main companies that were around before are kind of holding back, but all these wrestlers want to wrestle. And so these other guys have kind of stepped in. And usually that's kind of a bad news bears situation, because you get all these money marks that'll just throw stuff at a product and the wrestlers will take advantage and then it's dried up within a month. But one of them I posted on the page today has a building deal now, has like a regular venue. Like this, and I told the guy that owns this thing, I was like, dude, you're doing like old school territory stuff now. Like, this is you locking down a building and they're co-presenting it. So it's like, it's not just going and renting the same hall every week or every month. They've worked together to get this building. So it's pretty neat, man. It's pretty crazy. But
you're not working this, are you? You're just going.
No, I'm okay. Well, I'm bringing the wrestle wagon. I'm bringing the mobile studio. So I will be hoping to get some content, you know, but
cough, cough, Bret, cough, cough.
Well, I'll tell you off the air about that, but no, it's good. It's good. But anyway, I wanted to fit in that I was in Calgary somehow, because I really do like it here. The weather has sucked since I got here, though. It's 10 degrees today.
What?
Rain. Yeah, 10. I'm pretty sure we got into the minuses last night.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it was not good.
Yeah, you gotta come back to TO, dude. It was like 24 and beautiful today.
Oh, see, there you go. Well, there's not much stopping me, man. I got one thing to do on the 11th in Saskatoon, and then I just got signed on to do some announcing for a Dragon Boat Festival. Have you ever been to one of those?
I've seen one, yeah.
Yeah, everybody's seen one, right? It's like unless you really know about it or have somebody in it. I don't know how many people actively follow dragon boating, but
I would not say it's one of my top priority lists.
Well, it's one of mine now. It's one of mine now because, frankly, they're promising to pay. So that's
nice. Oh, then okay. Well, yeah, there you go.
So that's it, man. That's it. So otherwise, things are good. Are you lifting heavy stuff? What's going on?
Yeah. I had a workout Saturday, and you know, just taking it easy. I'll work out tomorrow, and then I really got to get back on the running track. That's like with a whole bunch of stuff in our garage, which is where I usually work out. I there's not a lot of space. So
yeah.
I figured I'd dust off the bike and I got to start running again. And what I used to run at work at lunch, I kind of stopped that for a while, but that's probably another thing I should start doing again.
Well, I got you that new back of the pack shirt. Have you worn it yet? Have you worked out in it yet?
Not yet. I'm in my first run. That's what I'm going to use it. That's what I mean.
Do it on a cooler day though. Cause it's long.
Yeah, for
right?
Sure.
So yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I got to ask, are you going to go on any of the rides at this Callaway Park Place?
The funny thing is when you camp here, you get a discount.
Right.
To go to and it's a one-time pay. It's not get in there and have to buy a bunch of tickets.
Right. So
you pay the one fee, you go inside the park, you can ride all the rides you want all day. And Joe, I will not be doing that. Like I said, I'm here because it's the cheapest per night rate I could find, but I'm also a very large, very grown ass man. And I'm pretty sure that if I do anything that resembles go on any of these rides, I'm going to break my ass neck. So I'm happy to let the kids have their fun.
All right. Well, again, I had to ask. You're at an amusement park.
No, there's far more entertaining things that I can find to do in Calgary, which is, I'll just leave it at that.
All right. Fair enough.
Like go to wrestling shows and other entertainment venues in the fine city of Calgary.
Hey, you know what? Hang on. I got to ask Dallas Hart. How old is that? How old is he now?
I don't know, but all I remember is that we were pretty close in age. And I say that because I remember when Bret Hart had his spotlight, one of his spotlight magazines, and Dallas got to write a column in it. And so they're the back pages of the WWF magazine was written by Dallas Hart.
Right.
So he's officially been a WWE quote unquote writer.
Wow.
Not really, but you know what I mean?
Yeah, I know what you mean.
So, I mean, I'm sure he gets asked about that all the time, but, yeah, now he's it's funny because none of the kids really showed an interest in doing anything with wrestling for the longest time. And then this Dungeon Wrestling popped up out of nowhere. So I'm looking forward to actually he's one of the ones I want to get on the show so I can get these questions answered a little more. But we've been talking back and forth on email and stuff over the last couple of weeks. So
right on.
So, yeah, it's been good, man. It's been good. But yeah, that's I would say probably late 30s. Probably late 30s now.
I remember like seeing him like on TV as a kid.
Well, yeah.
So
yeah, they age, you know.
I know. it tends to happen.
like Brett just celebrated his 65th birthday on Sunday, man. Like that was or on Saturday. On Saturday it was his 65th birthday.
Wow.
Isn't that crazy?
It is nuts.
Oh man. Anyway. So that's Calgary. That's renovations. That's lifting heavy things. Shall we take a trip onto the old Tuesday morning cooked airplane here?
Let's do it.
Let's take a trip, Joe. We are hopping on board and we are heading to San Diego, which is also, I'm not going to do the Anchorman joke, but you can. Anyway, before we actually get into the arena, we get a video package at the start of the show saying today is the 4th of July and we're going to celebrate the only way WWE can with puns. So many puns, including the wrestlers' names, into things that kind of resemble 4th of July celebrations. I didn't write down any of them, but I sure heard them. So did you happen to?
No, I did not write them down.
Well, see, now you've already dropped the ball, Joe, because this is the kind of thing we worry about here on the Tuesday Morning Cooked, is the puns. Anyway, we are in San Diego. Jimmy Smith is on vacation. So Big Irish, Kevin Patrick gets the big chair tonight. That was kind of a surprise for me. That's his first time ever doing commentary to that level. He's usually the leprechaun-y guy that comes out of the corner and ambushes all the superstars with a microphone. So anyway, he was in the middle of, this sounds also weird to you, I'm sure, but it's true. He literally just comes out of frame. And he'll just like startle people out of nowhere. The best one.
I remember he was there was one time they caught him like squatting. So he wasn't as tall as one of the wrestlers.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. That happened.
To be honest with you, I was surprised when I heard Jimmy Smith is on holiday. It's like they give these guys holidays. When did that happen?
Well, Corey Graves had like 2 or 3 weeks off for his honeymoon. Like there's been opportunities where they're actually being a little more human with their talent these days. So, I mean, good for them. We find out Jimmy Smith is on vacation, though. Kevin's there with Byron and Corey Graves. We get a promo of tonight. Look at that. We're actually leading into the show with a card. I like this because for a long time, Raw just kind of happened. It's like there was no planning at all. So they actually advertised that tonight for literally, Joe, I think the 7th time in 8 or 9 weeks. We had Asuka and Becky Lynch in the ring together doing something on Raw.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's been a lot of Asuka and Becky matches lately.
Yes, there have. And again, I might not be watching as much, but I'm still following what's going on. Actually, another thing that I noticed that sort of coming back to your question at the top, even though I haven't really watched a lot, it was easy to pick up, you know, where I left off. And that was like, you know, months ago. I was like, oh, okay, not much has changed. I hate to say it.
No, but at the same time, there has been some change. And we'll get to that as well. We do have the Mysterios versus Judgment Day tonight. Liv Morgan, the new SmackDown champion, will appear. And one of your big matches tonight as well, Lashley and the Street Profits, will take on Theory, the youngest Mr. Money in the Bank, and Alpha Academy. But first, we start off by welcoming the new United States champion, Bobby Lashley. Bobby is over like Grover, man.
Big time.
Yeah. He says that he's been waiting a long time for this moment. It's not the title that makes the man. It's the man that makes the title. Well, yes, in this case, it will be. There's not another man in any other division or any other promotion, which gets a big woo, that can beat him for that United States Championship. I'm sure all the AEW stars were just salivating for the shot, mostly because it meant they'd actually get to have a match on TV. But but anyway, Theory then enters. Mr. Money in the Bank. He says, why does Bobby get to kick off Monday Night Raw? He says, everybody is waiting to hear from Theory, the youngest Mr. Money in the Bank in WWE history. Says it was hard work getting that briefcase. To a litany of you suck chants. He says he beat veterans and past Money in the Bank winners to do it. Bobby retorts by saying that Theory was handed the opportunity to be in Money in the Bank and didn't earn it. Bobby offers a rematch for the U.S. title, though. Theory says that they'll fight later, but he's been guaranteed a rematch at SummerSlam. There goes the Cena versus Theory prediction that people were seeing for SummerSlam. Looks like that match is definitely being pushed back now. How far, we don't know. But it doesn't look like there's going to be any John Cena at SummerSlam. Theory calls his spot after Brock and Roman beat each other to bits after the last man standing match at SummerSlam. He says that after he picks the winning or beats the loser or the winner. Sorry. He says that after he pins the winner of that match, he will be the greatest WWE champion in history. Bobby says it's Independence Day. And these people deserve fireworks. They're about to scrap, but Theory suckers Lashley with the briefcase. Lashley turns it around, hits Theory with an elbow into a choke slam. And that's what ends the opening promo backstage. Mysterios are approached by Megan Morant, who hasn't been seen in this position on Raw before, but she's filling in for Kevin Patrick now. Dominic says that he is learning from the best. Now, I don't know if you heard the build up to this from last week, but I was having a ton of fun with this, Joe, where the Judgment Day said that maybe Dominic's problem wasn't that he was a bad wrestler. Maybe he has a bad dad. Right.
Yes, I saw that.
So again, I said we should have like the you and I talked about this on Sunday, didn't we? With the worst dad off, where it's like we should have a bad dad off match. But anyway, Dominic says that he is learning from the best. Ray says they were the first father and son tag team champions. And Ray also says that he hasn't wrestled in his hometown of San Diego in 10 years. This is Dominic's first match at home in the 619. Love it. Huge pop for Ray and Dom as they are introduced. Judgment Day appear from behind and sucker the Mysterios, who get tossed outside. And Joe, that is our cue, much like Dynamite, to go to break. Anytime somebody gets tossed outside, we're going to break, baby.
And that was the thing. At this point, I hadn't noticed yet. But then when it happened again, it was like, oh, wait a sec. What's going on here?
Also,
Dom with the mullet. Are we sure that he's not Eddie's son?
I've been saying that for weeks, man. They're waiting to break that thing out because he was also, he didn't have it tonight, but he was even sporting like a greasy mustache for a while.
Oh.
And I was like, come on.
If they don't do that callback,
put the Viva La Raza shirt on him and let's go. Let's go. Anyway. So we get back into the ring for segment three. It's the Mysterios versus Judgment Day, and Dominic and Balor are in the ring. Oh, I skipped a whole segment. Look at that. It was a lot of match. So let's blast through this here. Segment two, Finn and Dom are in the ring. Dom gets the early advantage. Finn manages to tag in Priest, though. The two have a back and forth. Dom pulls the rope as Priest charges, doing the old alley-oop to the outside. Ray is then tagged in for some of the classics before Priest stops Ray's springboard attempt into the ring, punches him, and knocks him outside the ropes. Balor is in. Ray manages to tag in Dom, who takes out both Finn and Damian on a hot streak. Dom then sets up the 619 on Finn, but Priest gets the blind tag, catches Dominic on the floor, and takes him out, and tosses Dominic into the barrier. We're outside the ring, Joe. What does that mean?
Go to break, baby.
There it is. That's all right. Okay, we come back. More match. Dominic and Balor are back in the ring together. Hot tags to Ray and Priest. Priest goes for the snake eyes on Ray, but is stopped, and Ray hits tornado DDT onto Priest from the corner. Ray then goes for the corner, but is stopped before managing to get up and hit a seated senton. Dominic then assists Ray, hitting a top rope hurricanrana onto Priest. But Priest kicks out at two and avoids a 619 to follow. Priest gets the tag to Balor, who misses the coup de grace. Double 619 on Priest and Balor. Ray gives an Eddie tribute before going for the frog splash, but Balor gets his knees up. A chair makes its way into the ring. Balor has it in his hand. The ref is distracted. So Ray takes the bump. Balor's holding the chair, not being hit by a chair. Ray is acting like he's dead, and the Eddie tribute gets the Mysterios the win by disqualification. So what do you think, man? A lot of Eddie tributes in this.
A lot of Eddie tributes. I mean, it was a serviceable match.
Serviceable.
You know, the Eddie tribute, that's always a fun thing. But the question that went through my head after this match was like, who has Judgment Day pissed off? Because like, I mean, didn't they just do main event recently? And now they're losing to the Mysterios, who have lost to everybody up until this week.
Well, I think this is leading up to something. I mean, they don't have Edge anymore, obviously, who we'll get to in a few minutes, but yeah, I don't know. I mean, the DQ win means we're going to have at least another match between these four, if not many more, because that seems to be what we do in WWE, is we just run these feuds until they're dust now. But it leaves it open-ended, right? So
yeah,
I guess, if anything, at least they were on Raw. You know, you gotta look at that for Judgment Day. At least they were on Raw this week.
Yeah, and like I don't like I hope that probably sounded a lot more critical than I meant it to be, because I enjoyed the end of the match. Like I thought that was funny, but like I guess what I wasn't really feeling was the fact that Judgment Day is supposed to be this like ultra serious heel dark team, and you're kind of putting them in a comedy ending. That didn't make sense to me.
Well, we'll see what happens. I think the ones that definitely got the comedy out of it were the Mysterios, though, because I mean they're in San Diego, it's their hometown, and holy, you know what, Joe? I just realized
it's hometown heroes won.
Hometown win. Hometown win. There we go. It'll be another 10 and a half, 11 years before we see that happen again. We witnessed history tonight. History in the making. Wow. Speaking of history in the making, we get a recap of Logan Paul signing with WWE and setting up the rivalry with The Miz, where The Miz said that they were going to be tag team champions together and everything should be hunky-dory, even though, as you recall, Miz turned on Logan Paul after their match at WrestleMania.
Yes, so, yes, he did.
Megan Morant's backstage with The Miz. Miz says that he's proud that Logan Paul is calling him out. He says that Paul surrounds himself with yes men and women. Out there, it's successful for him. And if anyone knows how WWE can humble someone, it's The Miz. He tells Paul to retract his statement and that they should work together to be WWE tag champs. Miz says if Logan doesn't, he will humble him. Megan brings up Miz quitting his match against AJ Styles last week, which is true. He walked out of the match and got the count out. And then, are you familiar with the reference to the Miz's...
Yes, I am.
Yeah. Yeah. So here we are. We're a month and change into this now. And Miz says that he's going to show AJ and the WWE Universe that he has colossal, massive, gargantuan, American, super-sized balls. There, I said it. I even rewound so I could quote it exactly. I did not want to misstep this one at all.
Because, you know, it's 2022 and we're still doing balls jokes. Oh, right. Vince is still the head of creative. I forgot.
Vince is even more the head of creative now because he doesn't have to do his other job.
You know what? Up until that point, I actually liked this promo. It was great, right? Yeah. Like, I love the part where he says, you know, I love confidence, talking about Logan Paul. I love wild, outlandish statements, which yes. is what Logan Paul said. You know, the fact that he referenced his own history being a reality TV star, right?
All good everything points.
Was yep. everything was going great until we got to when they, you know, when Megan made the reference, like, and he's like, "Don't say it."
May I again? His colossal, massive, gargantuan, American supersized balls.
Yeah. Once they got to that line, I was like, "Oh, you just ruined that promo for me."
Friends, I've been in broadcasting for over 20 years, if you want to count volunteering as a teenager. And I can tell you right now, this is probably the peak for me. Nowhere to go but down. Nowhere to go but down. All right. Here comes the infamous AJ Styles entrance into break. You ready?
I'm ready.
AJ comes out. We get a promo for Ronda and Roman appearing on SmackDown this Friday. We come back from break. Segment 4 doesn't start with AJ Styles in the ring. No. We get the, did you know that Logan Paul's signing is the most liked photo in WWE Instagram history? Well, of course we all knew that. But why not? Anyway. Then, instead of going back to the ring where AJ Styles is still waiting patiently, we get a video from earlier today where a 4th of July party is being held backstage by the Street Profits. Riddle is there in a bathing suit. Shelton Benjamin is there. A load of extras are there. Alpha Academy interrupts. Otis says he could eat 20 hot dogs without breaking a sweat, which leads to a hot dog eating contest challenge for later that night. They actually put out a social media blast promoting a hot dog eating challenge for tonight. That was actually put in the itinerary for the show. Hot dog eating challenge tonight on the longest running episodic weekly television show in history. The Mysterios are backstage celebrating their big win, but they're ambushed by Judgment Day again, and they're left groaning. And AJ Styles, we hear a faint whisper of his music, but that's cut short immediately. But he's still in the ring. Commentary then spends time promoting that the NXT Great American Bash is tomorrow on USA, so you should watch that. And then AJ's music finally pipes back in. He's standing in the ring, and you can see him literally re-warming up because he's been standing there for, drum roll please, 12 minutes.
Okay. I didn't know it was that long. I thought it was like seven, maybe. But
12 minutes.
Here's the thing. When they hit the Dom and Ray Judgment Day backstage thing, backstage yep. attack.
Yep.
This is, I think I had completely forgotten that AJ was still in the ring. So then when I heard his music, right out of my notes, this is what I wrote this. Holy crap. Was AJ standing in the ring all that time? That's what I wrote.
Yes, he was.
Wow.
And if he wasn't standing in the ring, because I've seen this happen at Raw's before, where they will literally get out of the ring and stand on the side. Or I've even seen people take a chair at ringside.
Wow.
Like they'll sit in the timekeeper box while they know they're standing out there forever. So I don't know if that's what they do now, but I mean, how much of an idiot do you have to feel like when you're just standing there waiting for nothing? And then your segment comes in and you're still not on yet.
Holy. Okay. Like, and again, that's news to me. I just remember thinking he's been standing out there this entire time. Like you couldn't wait. You couldn't have done the earlier today, 4th of July thing, the Dom Ray thing, and then have AJ come out. Like that just seems really strange, man.
I don't know. They, you know how these companies work though, man. They have a theory behind it. They have a logic to it, and I'm sure it's working for the results they want. I don't know what that is, but you know, maybe it's a theory on how to hook people into the next segment, right? AJ Styles is still there. I honestly thought they were going to pull a fast one on us and maybe they decided to cut the match because I was like, okay, they're not going back to AJ. I guess we're going to get something else. But no, they went back to him 12 minutes wow. later.
Wow. I'm shocked by this.
All right. We come back after the match has started a little bit. There's a little bit of back and forth. Of course, someone goes to the outside. Segment five is Miz versus AJ Styles continuing. AJ has the advantage. There's the constant back and forth. I mean, both these guys know what they're doing. And when we hit matches like this, I tend to blow through them pretty quick because you know what you're getting from an AJ Styles. You know what you're getting from a Miz. And the two meshed well. You know, they didn't do anything crazy outlandish, but they still had a great solid match. Afterwards, though, Styles hits the phenomenal forearm, gets the pin. Ciampa ambushes AJ in the ring. Commentary implies that Ciampa has been trying to impress the Miz as of late. AJ manages to fight back a little bit, hitting the Pele kick and not smashing up his own face like he did last week doing it, but hits the Pele kick on Ciampa. Miz interferes and stops the Styles clash from happening with a skull-crushing finale. Miz and Ciampa shake hands, so Miz has a new stunt double slash cheerleader slash valet in the form of Ciampa Sandow.
So starting with the match, solid match, but yeah. Man, like that AJ was standing in the ring longer than that match was.
Yep.
And you know what? I'll admit I'm intrigued with this Miz Ciampa thing. I think this like that was like, wow. Okay. You got me kind of hooked here. Let me see what's going on with that.
Miz is great on his own, but Miz has always shone brighter when he has a partner of some kind, when he's had Maurice out there with him, when he had Sandow, when he had Alex Riley to go back in time. You know, all these little accessory players have made him look better. So I think this is a good move. I don't know if Ciampa's the guy, but we'll see. I guess we'll see.
Well, hopefully this leads to like down the line, some sort of breakup slash tension slash conflict between these two.
Oh yeah. 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 Or Miz will just, you know, obliterate poor Ciampa into irrelevance, because that's what seems to happen to a lot of his partners as well.
Oh, okay. That's true too.
Yeah, right. It's a sad truth. All right, Liv is coming up after the break. Our new SmackDown Women's Champion is going to speak to us on Raw. Okay, segment number 6. We get a recap of what happened at Money in the Bank. Liv is literally getting teary upon entering the arena. And I don't know if you've been following along, Joe, but the Liv Morgan recaps usually involve at least 25% crying. And so we get that right off the hop. She's already looking a little verklempt, a little choked up right at the beginning. So she gets teared up, takes her pose in the ring, gets the "you deserve it" chance. Liv forgets what a microphone is for as she yells into it, "Thank you guys, but we deserve it." Oh my God. Nothing drives me. And I realize I project, I can be heard as yelling, but this is me projecting. There's a difference between projecting and yelling. And nothing drives me more nuts than when anybody yells into a microphone. What are you doing? Anyway,
that was one of many cringe moments in this whole segment, to be honest with you.
Oh, we'll break out the cringy meter, because we go into the promo. She says she is proud to be your guys' SmackDown Women's Champion. All her dreams came true thanks to one unbelievable night at Money in the Bank. She got to outclimb 6 of the greatest competitors in the hardest battle of her life. She then says, "All of you guys are what got her through it, you guys." Sorry. I like Liv too, but we got to work on these promos, man. You've stayed with her on the journey every single step of the way. You believed in her even when she felt she gave you nothing to believe in. She randomly just starts laughing and jumping around in the ring for a second. I mean, that's good. That's joy. Whatever. And then she says that the crowd gave her confidence to...
Wait, no. She said, you guys gave me confidence.
Yeah. Well, hold on. I got to get to the rest of it, because she then said, "You guys gave me the confidence to..." SmackDown Women's Champion. This reminds me of the old Simpsons bit. "Homer, what's wrong? You're going to be..." "Homer, slow down. You're gonna fit a ready error."
Oh man.
Oh my God. Anyway, she says the championship isn't just for her, it's for all of us, when thankfully Natty enters and interrupts. I part of me makes me think they were making her stretch. Like I kind of saw them, like, because she's just saying the same thing over and over at this point.
It was like, yeah, that, like, okay, first of all, the gratuitous use of the word guys, you guys made this, all of you guys. It's like, stop. No. But yeah, like right before Natty came out, it was like, somebody come out here and just give her a hand, because it was getting oof. It was already like a really bad babyface promo. Like, whoever wrote that really needs some QA.
Liv Morgan fans, don't get mad at me, because like I said, I love Liv. I'm making fun of the fact that she's yelling into the microphone the whole time. But this promo could have been summed up as, "You guys, SmackDown Women's Champion, this is for all of us."
And that would have actually been a much better promo.
It was shorter. It sure as hell was shorter. Okay, we're not done yet. Natty comes to the ring, says the only reason that Liv is champion is because Natty destroyed Ronda's knee with the most dangerous move in WWE. And she just putters it out there. The sharpshooter. You know, it's just the sharpshooter. Liv says that since they'll be sharing a locker room on SmackDown now, that Natty knows where to find her. Carmella then enters, asks why Liv or Natty are there, which the audio guy was probably wondering the same thing. Says that they need to get their little SmackDown blue butts off of Raw. Tells the two of them to take the fight to SmackDown and to leave the spotlight to her. Liv says if you really want her out of the ring, Carmella needs to make her get out. Carmella and Natty then form a very awkward alliance. But Liv pulls a Han Solo and she shoots first, taking shots at Natty and then Carmella before she's getting beat in the corner. And wouldn't you know it, your WWE Raw Women's Champion, girl, Bianca Belair, runs in for the save. And then Teddy Long makes his way out.
Holla, holla.
Only Teddy looks a lot like Adam Pearce, but you know where this is going, playa. Coming up next, we got ourselves a tag team match. Holla, holla. Oh, man, I'm having too much fun with this. We go to break. Segment 7, Bianca and Carmella are in the ring, and Bianca has the advantage to tag in Liv. Liv and Natty now go off. Natty gets in some offense, but Liv gets a roll up for two. Liv very visually then calls her next spot into Natty's ear. You get like pure as day. And you saw my setup here. So I have a TV here in the wrestle wagon and it's across from me. It's not that big, but when I can see you calling your spot from way over here, I can only imagine what it's like for people in the arena, but whatever. I mean, that Cena did it all the time and nobody cares. I find it funny when you have all that hair that you can use to cover up your calls is like just right center of the camera. And again, I'm not ragging on Liv, guys. It was humorous. Okay. It's going to be in the You Talk Too Much segment of Botchamania. I guarantee it. Liv gets picked up by Natty, who rolls into a sunset flip pin. Natty manages to get the sharpshooter on, but Bianca uses her hair as a tow rope, like the good old winter ditches here in Alberta. Uses a tow rope for Liv to grab onto and then get the tag. Bianca is in, lifts Natty for a powerbomb, but Natty reverses it into a Rana. And then Bianca sets up the standing suplex, but Natty goes to set up the standing suplex on Natty. Carmella tries to come in and stop it, but while she's holding Natty in the air, she is kicking Carmella. This is showing off a feat of strength, obviously. And then she manages to drop Natty. Carmella gets tagged in as Natty is tossed outside, but Carmella kicks Bianca into the ring post after Bianca is chasing Natty after she falls to the outside. We go to break again. Come back. Bianca's trying to get back to her corner. Natty ends up working her over. There's quick tags. Eventually, Natty hits that Brody Lee clothesline on Liv, which I always love seeing. That's a nice little callback to old Big Rig there. Everything's a mess in this match until it's Natty and Liv in the ring. Natty tries a sharpshooter, but Liv reverses it, hitting her finish on Natty, and the women's champions are your winners of this match. Okay, match thoughts, Joe.
Bianca's great. I like Natty. Carmella's character is good. Liv, I think, needs some work. It was okay. I can't complain about it.
So I don't get the full fury of the Liv Morgan fans out there. I disagree. I thought she was serviceable, to use the Joe Agnello term.
I do like her finishing move, yeah. And I think she will get better. Like I don't mind Liv. I don't have a problem with her, but just again, I'm gonna say just cringe. There was some cringe stuff.
Those Liv fans are crazy. Be careful. Okay. We then go back to our 4th of July party outside. And we see all these weird shots. Alpha Academy are talking about something. We then pan across. Veer Mahan is sitting there about to enjoy some barbecue, but then his plate is stolen by Ali and Cedric. Oh my God. These guys could have gone in there and put on an 8-minute classic. Like they could have just done a whole bunch of fast spots, been a cruiserweight showcase, but nope. They are stealing Veer's food. We then get to MVP and Omos, who are conversing. Well, MVP's conversing. Omos is listening. MVP tells Omos how he's the biggest threat. Dana then stops in with the 24/7 title. She's chased by the 24/7 crew. Reggie bumps into Omos and then gets tossed out of frame. We presume that he is somewhere off the California coast now, because where else could he be? Zeke and the Prophets are now at the back, and Ezekiel is talking about how he, Elias, and his other brother, Eldor. I always want to say Endor, because why not? But they're all together now. Oh, Elrod. Sorry.
Elrod. Not
Eldor. Elrod. Yeah. Eldor. Why not? That's the fourth brother right there. Eldor. Anyway, says they all had a pie eating contest earlier, but it didn't turn out well, as it turned into a barf-a-rama after they all started barfing their pie. So this is, again, classic Vince McMahon barf jokes, which we weren't done with yet. Save it. Zeke then gets some ketchup onto his hot dog, or he tries to anyways, but he ends up spraying it out of frame, and it covers Seth freaking Rollins and his nice white shirt. I gotta admit, Seth looked pretty good. I think this was a show I could get on board with. This, if I was built like Seth Rollins, I would wear stupid shirts like that all the time. You know why? Because you can get away with it.
Oh, I'm all in with like Seth's wardrobe right now. That's because
you're a gym freak. You've got the body for it, man. You can get away with it. Me, it's like, it would be like, I don't know, stuffing a biscuit in a napkin. Like, it just wouldn't look right. It wouldn't look right. But anyway, somehow they come up with Seth, Zeke, and Rollins, which I don't know how that hasn't been a thing yet. But we find out this sets up a match between Seth Rollins and Ezekiel. Now, you probably weren't watching for this, but 2 weeks ago, we were promised a match between Kevin Owens and Ezekiel. Last week, there was no Owens on Raw. They said that match has been rescheduled. Assumed it meant there was going to be this week, but there's no word on Owens. I hope for his sake, everything's okay. He said in a tweet he was fine. He just didn't want to be in Texas last time, but and I'm not going to pry anymore. If a story comes out of it, then fine. But I just hope that Owens is all right. But eventually we'll get that match. But it sets up Seth versus Ezekiel. We have an in-arena break to a very long promo for the Thor Love and Thunder movie. And then we go to commercial. So Seth Rollins now gets to stand in the ring like an idiot.
Yeah, but was it 12 minutes?
I didn't time this one.
I don't think it was 12 minutes, though.
No, but it was probably a solid 8 or 9, because that Thor promo alone was 2 minutes. And then you get commercials, so that's 5. And then we get the religious imagery that we got over Money in the Bank, which a lot of people are thinking, now that I've looked at it a few times, I agree. I think it's an Edge promo. I think there's going to be something to bring him back to. I don't know what he's going to be, but they had a lot of imagery of, yeah, the Hardys and Kurt Angle and the medals. And the only other thing I can think of, though, is like, where's the Cena representation? There was nothing in there. I mean, talk about one of Edge's greatest rivalries, right? But, or maybe they're taking Edge back to the Attitude Era, and maybe it's like Vampire Edge again.
Ooh, Brood. Yeah, yeah. Right?
Big, shiny PVC jackets again. Let's do that. Okay, Rollins is in the ring. We get a recap of Rollins attacking Riddle. So then you see, again, more time being eaten up here. Finally, Ezekiel makes his way to the ring. It's fists fighting until Zeke hits a big German suplex on Rollins. Zeke hits some bigger moves before he tosses Rollins to the outside. We have a lot of back and forth in this match. Again, it's nothing spectacular here, but this was a solid match where, again, they're trying to sell the fact that, can Ezekiel hang with Seth Rollins? Zeke, at one point, outside of the ring, gorilla presses Rollins into the timekeeper's pit as we go to
break.
Segment 10, Zeke and Rollins are fighting to suplex one another, but Zeke actually hits it. I'm going to be completely honest, Joe. At this point, I was getting hungry. I kind of lost interest in this match a bit, so I didn't take notes. I was watching, and there was some great back and forth again, but eventually ends up with Zeke getting a close pinfall by dragging him down. What do they call that when they go back-to-back? Shoulder, backslide.
Backslide.
Backslide, yeah. Pin. Excuse me. Hits the backslide on Rollins, and Rollins manages to kick out at 2, gets up immediately, hits Zeke with the stomp for the win. Seth freaking Rollins is your winner, but hey, Zeke got to hang with Seth, so that's something.
He did get quite a bit of offense in that match, and some good offense, too.
Yeah, it was. I see, and I've always flown the flag for Elias Ezekiel. I've I've always seen the entertainment in this guy. I mean, we got to remember there was a time where this guy was over like Grover. Like they gave him the Cena spot at WrestleMania, right? Like,
yeah, yeah.
There's no way that this guy wasn't being invested in and being perceived by fans as someone to support or boo, because the guy knows what he's doing. And even as this ridiculous Ezekiel character, I'm enjoying it. I'm enjoying it. I said it. I'm enjoying it. There you go.
I am too. I think it's a fun character.
Yeah. Well, like why do we have to take everything so freaking seriously? Right. Why
not? I got no problems with this.
Remember that thought as we go back to our hot dog eating contest. Now I'm going to be completely on the level with you here. They got me. They got me with this one. I did not see this coming. We go to the hot dog eating contest. We see Dawkins. He's got a bunch of hot dogs. He's slamming into his face. Otis has got a bunch of hot dogs. He's slamming into his face. We get the scoreboard where Ford has 22 hot dogs consumed. Otis has 23. Referee announces your winner of the hot dog eating contest, Akira Tozawa, with 48 hot dogs. The sales job that Tozawa did sitting at that table, looking like he actually had just eaten 48 hot dogs. I could believe it. I saw it. I was like, I laughed out loud. I'm sure the people in the campground here thought I was nuts because I was laughing hysterically at this thing. Call it dumb. I get it. But guys, come into Raw expecting dumb things and it's going to be okay. This is like going to a funny Jim Carrey movie. You're not going in to watch 23. You're going to watch The Mask, or you're going to watch something ridiculous. And if you go into Raw expecting the ridiculous, they over-delivered with this segment. So
I am with you. I was not expecting that. And when they said, especially because it was Tozawa, you know what I mean? Yeah. If they'd said Reggie, I'm not saying it wouldn't have been funny, but Tozawa was hilarious.
It's just the facial he's got. Like, I mean, that's so good.
I laughed out loud on that too.
Yeah, little bits of hot dog all over him and one all over him. Like, you know, how can you not laugh at that, right? So we get to Theory walking up to Otis and Gable, reminding them the six-man tag match is coming up. So you guys better be ready for this, right? Six-man tag is up next as Lashley enters the arena with the United States Championship. He's on his podium. He's looking bigger than life itself because, frankly, he is. And we have Lashley doing his entrance before we go to break. Come back to segment 11. Street Profits enter. Theory and Alpha Academy enter. Now, commentary is mentioning through this whole match that Otis might be too full to compete. Apparently, 22 hot dogs before a match is fine. But if you have 23, like Otis did, then you're at risk for being complicated in your match.
Isn't there a rule somewhere that like 22, 23 is the line somewhere?
Yeah. No? Yeah. 22, you can go out and wrestle for hours. You'll be fine. Just like Angelo Dawkins did. 23. It's like an hour after swimming, even though I think or hour after eating before you go swimming, you just don't do it. Even though I think they dispelled that one somehow. Anyway, whatever. Okay. Angelo Dawkins and Theory start. Theory manages tagging Gable, who works the left leg of Dawkins. Dawkins goes for a sunset flip. Gable gets an ankle lock. Dawkins escapes that. Tag to Ford, who hits some serious agility, including that beautiful standing moonsault that he does. See, I don't know if people realize just how tall the Street Profits actually are. They are giant men. They are like 6'6", 6'7", minimum, if not taller, because they are big, big dudes. So for Ford to hit this standing moonsault amazes me every time he does it. Lashley and Ford do dual standing suplexes. This is kind of a nice moment, too, keeping with the whole 4th of July theme, because both men, of course, former members of the military. They do a dual standing suplex. They hold their opponent up. They salute the fans, do a bicep pose, and then drop them. All three heels are on the outside. the three baby faces are posing in the ring, which means we're going to
break.
Segment 12 commentary brings up the hot dog differential I mentioned between Otis and Dawkins. What, 22 is nothing, but 23 is something? Okay, fine. That, again, this, you know what? This actually supports my hypothesis better.
Actually, all right.
Because if the commentator's bringing it up, now you know it's something, okay? All right, 22. Joe, before you work out tomorrow, 22 hot dogs, you're fine.
All right, but if I eat that 23rd, I got to
call call an ambulance in advance, okay? Have them waiting for you. Oh, God. Action is outside. Otis nails Dawkins, and Theory is inside with Ford. There's a hot tag as Lashley gets in. Theory charges towards the corner, realizes it's Lashley, immediately 180s and runs for his life, tagging in Gable. I enjoyed that. Gable is tagged in, and it's all Lashley. Dawkins hits a pounce on Theory outside of the ring, and Theory is now out of the match. Lashley power slams Gable for two after Otis manages to break the pin. Lashley then hits a spear on Otis. Oh, no. Then Ford hits Otis's midsection with From the Heavens. Oh, no. Gable manages to hit the American Automatic on Ford. He then hits a moonsault on Lashley for two, but Bobby gets up, spears Gable for the three count. Your winners are Bobby Lashley and the Street Profits. And then Otis and Gable are back in the ring together, and Otis projectile vomits with pieces of hot dog and everything else almost immediately into Gable's face. I want to bet you $1 that he was going to get Gable, and then Gable's like, screw this, man. I'm just stepping. Like, it was way too close. Anyway, we get Otis barfing in the ring, which then, by the way, warrants a slow motion replay. This is again, Vince. Oh, get it on replay. That's good shit.
Like two or three times, man.
You get the HD replay of Otis blowing hot dog chunks. You hear the whole crowd do what we're all doing. Oh. And we then go back to Megan Morant, who brings in Becky Lynch. Becky says nobody cares about Otis, and he doesn't deserve her spotlight. I don't know, Bex. He got a replay on that. Like. Anyway, she says that ever since Asuka returned, everything has gone wrong. The only thing worse than no holds barred is no holds Becky. So I think, okay, we got about a half an hour left. We're going into this match. This is going to be something crazy, right? Nope. We then get a big graphic on the screen, the video entrance, Uncle Sam's Independence Day celebration. Uncle Sam is R-Truth walking out to the ring in a very bad Colonel Sanders goatee, an even worse wig, and Americana all over him. This is coming up after the break. We have to wait for this. Okay. Segment 13. R-Truth is now in the ring as Uncle Sam, and he wants to pay tribute to celebrate our Independence Day. He says, he introduces himself, I'm Uncle Sam, y'all. And R-Truth is the one reason that I still enjoy Monday Night Raw. I've said this before. I am 100% behind R-Truth. If you don't like it, I don't care. He's the best. He is the best thing going in WWE now, then, forever. Okay? Because he's like, he just doesn't care, and he does everything. He'll do everything. He says he wants to pay tribute to our Independence Day, and he wants to salute those brave. He wants to salute those brave people who defended the world against the aliens on Independence Day in 1996. He pays tribute to Will Smith, Jeff Goldblum, and of course, Vivica A. Fox. I'm dead at this point. I'm just dead. He says, I'd like to read a passage from that day. He said, Welcome to Earth, Smash.
Okay. Before you go any further.
Hold on. I can't hear you. Hold on. I just ripped my stuff out. That's how much I'm laughing. Hold on. Oh, God. I think I'm upsetting my neighbors now because it's just so crazy in here. But yeah, go ahead, Joe. Sorry.
No, before you go any further, I'm totally with you with R-Truth because,
oh, dude,
this guy is like, you know what you're getting, and it's entertaining as hell. And this was no exception.
This is what everything that tries to be an entertaining segment in wrestling isn't, because he's just so good, because you can tell he just doesn't care and he loves doing it. He loves cracking people up. Then we get a surprise, which is kind of a neat surprise, actually. Ludwig Kaiser from SmackDown is there. And he introduces a man worth our celebration. Yo, WWE Intercontinental Champion. I'm starting to sound like Hans Gruber from
Die Hard. From Die Hard.
I introduce a man worthy of your celebration. WWE Intercontinental Champion. The Ring General. Gunther. So Gunther comes to the ring. USA chants begin. All of a sudden we have a ref, because apparently there was a match that was made and nobody told Truth. R-Truth had no idea he was in a match. He even says that. He's like, "Well, I'm Uncle Sam. What do we do?" Oh my God. Gunther hits a high kick on Truth, knocking him down. Truth gets a bit of comeback, but gets taken down by a clothesline before a powerbomb from Gunther in the three counts. Your winner, WWE Intercontinental Champion, Gunther John McClane.
Does Kaiser do that intro for Gunther all the
every time? Every time, yeah.
Wow, that's almost as long as Cody's entrance, man.
Well, less pyro, though.
Yes, true.
Yeah.
But just from a length perspective, though, that's a long entrance.
Well, hey, it's not always about length, Joe. Not always about length. Sarah Schreiber makes an appearance. She's backstage asking Alexa if she's happy for her friend Liv Morgan for being SmackDown Women's Champion. Alexa says, she said last week, "I don't have friends here," but she said it made her realize it's been way too long since she's held something other than Lily. Asuka then interrupts, saying that she will beat Becky and become the next Raw Women's Champion. I love Asuka so much, too. Like, she's just so nuts.
Oh, she's awesome.
We then get a promo that we're going to have a promo for Brock and Roman. Next, we then get a quick promo for the Undertaker biography, which is going to be on A&E this Sunday. Looks a lot like a condensed version of The Last Ride, but with new stuff and new footage. So that'll be cool. The Edge one that's coming up, by the way, it'll be in a few weeks. Tony Candelo, who I interviewed here on SNME a while back, and that interview is going to be free for everybody soon, but patrons, you had it a couple weeks ago. Tony Candelo was actually filmed in Toronto for the Edge A&E biography. I didn't mention that in the interview, but
cool.
Yeah, so he's going to be in that as well. So if you haven't listened to that Tony Candelo interview yet, patrons, go back into your recently played or whatever, or go back into the library and find it there, because it's, you know, he's a character. He's a guy for sure, but it's worth a listen, because you'll hear some of these stories, I'm sure, on that biography. Okay, segment 14, we get that imagery for Edge once again. At least we think it's Edge. We then get the same one that we had over the weekend from Money in the Bank, the big 3-minute promo or 4-minute promo for the last man standing match at SummerSlam, the chapter in the book of Reigns and Lesnar will be written once again. Does that help you build excitement for this match?
Yes, I guess. Yeah. I mean, I'm excited. I was already excited for the match, but after you see it on every commercial break, it's like, all right, I got it. Thank you. Move on, please.
All right. I made a note of this. So 8:39 my time, which is 10:39 your time, Becky Lynch makes her entrance to the ring. Becky goes for a table. We go to break. It's segment 15, 8:45 now, or 10:45 Eastern. Asuka enters wearing her Jason mask and has a trash can in hand. Becky has built a stack of chairs outside of the ring in front of commentary, as well as setting up that table. 8:47, the bell rings. So this is actually a short 8-minute break for Becky. 8 minutes is all she had to wait to start her match this week, which is literally half the time of other times she's had to wait. So good for her. We get going. Again, it's 8:47, though, so we gotta hustle here. Asuka gets the early pin and hits Becky with a chair. I don't know if Asuka's done a lot of chair shots before, because she sure didn't seem comfortable with the first one. But she got it in there, and then by the end of it, they were laying it in, so that was good. We get a back and forth until they're both on the outside of the ring on the apron. They do that fake spot where they're going to, or not fake spot, but they do that spot where they fake out doing a suplex off the apron. I don't think I've ever actually seen that done. Ever.
No.
Onto the floor, and I don't want to.
No.
Indie wrestlers, I don't want to see that. Okay. Hardys, Young Bucks, Darby Allin, I don't want to see it. Okay. They tease the suplex and powerbomb off the apron onto the stack of chairs on the floor. Asuka manages to counter a chair shot, and then on the outside, there's a hip attack into the breakaway barricade at the timekeeper's position. Yes, the same barricade that it took all the strength of Brock Lesnar or Keith Lee or Sheamus or Mark Henry. Asuka's ass can knock that thing over. So, I mean, yay, I guess.
That's a hell of a hip attack.
That's a hell of a hip. Hell of a hip. Okay, we go to break after that. Segment 16, both are outside. Becky rolls Asuka into the ring. A superplex gets set up onto a pile of chairs in the ring as well. Brandi Rhodes then comes out and lights them all on fire.
Stop. Now you've gone too far.
Just wanted to see if you were paying attention. Asuka does the double upside down Oscar the Grouch spot on Becky with a drop kick, hitting her with a missile drop kick while Becky is wearing said trash can. Asuka pulls the table out, but Becky cuts her off, tosses her into the stairs outside. Lynch sets up the table in the ring. Asuka drops Lynch, and the two have an exchange of blows before Becky hits Asuka with a chair and hit her. Hit her. This is like, you suplex me in that stack of chairs, I'm going to wallop you with this one. So that was nice to see. They're laying it in. They're having fun, I'm sure. Asuka gets up and tries for the Asuka lock, but gets knocked out in the corner after Becky rams her in backwards. Asuka brings a bamboo umbrella into the ring and hits Becky with it. Becky dodges the green mist, although somehow still had a lot of it on her face by the time the match was done. The two take the corner by the table. They are on the top rope. They're setting up what could be a superplex from Asuka, but Becky turns it around. Manhandle slam through the table. Becky wins by pinfall, and Becky Lynch, without a microphone in her hand, starts yelling, "I am back! I am back! I am back!" And meanwhile, Liv Morgan's in the back going, "Bah, rah, 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 rah." That is Monday Night Raw for July the 4th, 2022. Joe, any closing thoughts here?
God bless our truth. You know what? It was a serviceable show. It was some fun stuff. And, you know, kind of like what you said, if you don't take it too seriously, it was entertaining. I did like the Becky Asuka match, although I wish they had been given a bit more time. That was like was a pretty quick, no holds barred match. But again, for the most part, it was an all right Raw.
But I mean, they did lay stuff in too. So I mean, I don't want to see that go for a half an hour or an hour either, because they gotta be on the road this week too, man. Like that's the big difference. Like Meltzer and I talked about it on the show over the weekend here. When you're only wrestling once every week or once every couple of weeks, the temptation is to go crazy because you got more time to heal up. Whereas they don't have the time. You know, they're the way Raw's been going, they're going to have another match next week, even though the rivalry is supposedly over. What else is Becky going to do? What else is she going to do? Right. So,
no, that's fair. And again, I think what it is too, is that just, I'm not used to watching like these sort of shortish matches compared to what I've been seeing on Dynamite, where, you know, they tend to go a bit more all out. And I'm not saying it's not good. It's not bad. It's just different. Right. So,
but then again, we also have like two or three segment matches in this show. So they do go long when they want to.
Yeah.
But yeah, like you said, this wasn't this wasn't Anarchy in the Arena where it went on for 15 minutes and they're just smashing the hell out of each other. It was well paced for a no holds barred match. Mm-hmm. They got some serious spots in. I don't know how the hell Becky takes that spot coming off the suplex onto the chairs.
That did not look fun at all.
No, well, especially after Brandy lit him on fire, but
but it was weird watching that, and then, you know, going back to our conversation on Sunday about are wrestlers taking it too far or are the fans expecting it? Because, like, you know, like even the fans were kind of chanting, "We want tables" during that match.
Yeah. Know? Yeah. I mean, that happened at Hell in a Cell. I mean, that happens all the time now. Whenever there's anything that's implied as a no holds barred match, you're going to get people saying, "Bring out the table, bring out the table." Like tables aren't special anymore either. You know, it's like, it's just, yeah, it's expected. That's where, and that goes back to the argument or discussion, because it wasn't really an argument, but the discussion that we had on the weekend where our fan, like, it's almost like a guttural instinct now. As soon as a hardcore match starts, "We want tables." We're 10 seconds in, guys.
Yeah.
Can we do at least one drop down takeover, you know, like just something? Anyway, that was Raw. Your first time watching overall, not the worst.
No, like, again, entertaining show. It wasn't like I was coming in expecting a, you know, quote unquote serious wrestling show. It was fun. Even the Otis throwing up thing I thought was hilarious. I thought they built that well.
Yes, when it comes down to great storylines that have been built, we will look back in the day to the Summer of Punk 2013. We'll look back to Hogan and Warrior, Hogan and Savage, Bret and Shawn, and Otis blowing hot dog chunks all over the ring. And again, big ups to Chad Gable, you brilliant man, you stepping to the side. Thank God. Thank God. All right. I think that does it for the show, my man.
Cool.
All right. You got anything else going on? Are you going to be around for All Elite Weekly this week, or is someone selling in for you still?
I am planning to be around for All Elite Weekly. It's been a while since I've talked to Dan. So,
all right. There you go. The Mouth and Joe back together this Thursday. Thank you for being a part of what is unofficially loosely being called Tuesday Morning Cooked right now, as a tribute to the fine fellows who brought this show to us and who we are both covering for right now. But anyway, thank you very much for listening, letting us do what we do. Play safe, drive safe. I'll be seeing you. Look out for that hot dog, Joe!